prepare for a truth revolution.
Actually, you can't prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free.
Yes, the truth will set you free. Truth Revolution. I'm Dave. With me is Pastor Jeff.
Good morning.
And we contend
that truth and reason, I mean faith and reason, can fit together.
Well, obviously truth and reason can,
obviously,
can coexist.
Obviously truth and reason. I'm so tired from last night.
Tell me about it.
Tornadoes.
I got three words.
What?
Wow.
Dave, that was only one word.
Each letter was a word. I'm telling you, that
really?
Was that big.
Man, that was awesome.
That was.
I lived in California for a while. And all my friends in California think we are all insane
right.
for living in Kansas.
Well, after last night, I think maybe I'm insane for living in Kansas. I was born and raised in Colorado. I'm used to blizzards, not this kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, you know you live in Kansas when the tornado sirens go off, and that's cue for everybody to open their front door and look.
Right, yeah.
Hey, I mean, that's
hey, honey, get the camera.
Yeah, I had my video camera out last night. It was my little boy's first tornado.
I bet you did. You got to put that in a scrapbook?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, it was a video camera, so I can't really scrapbook that, but you know.
So
this morning we're talking about our planet's role within the grand scheme of the universe,
which is kind of odd because of what happened last night.
It does. It fits really well.
It does. We live on a privileged planet,
and privileged planet is the name of the video, the book that we're kind of discussing. So if you're looking for information about what we talked about tonight, if you want the technical information, if you want more details, more science to this, go ahead and grab the book, The Privileged Planet. If you want a really cool overview of this, grab the video, The Privileged Planet. You can get both of those. I say we're going to link to those on our website. How about that?
That'll work.
And that way you can grab them off the website. And
if you want a really good overview of the video and the book,
you can listen
to us.
Listen to the Truth Revolution radio show. It's a good thing you're listening right now.
Uh-huh.
All right. So anyway, the video or the book, their goal is to discover our planet Earth's role in the grand scheme of the whole universe.
Right.
We have a lot of scientific changes that have taken place over the past 100,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
Even the past 100 years. You know, hey, in 1543, Copernicus argued that the Earth was not stationary. And this was like a revolutionary idea, wasn't it?
Right. Oh, yeah.
I mean, woo, buddy, you talk about
well, at that time, I mean, the Earth was the center of the universe, yes?
In their minds. Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. In their minds. Well, at that time,
yes.
People fought.
Yeah, until 1543, the Earth was the center of the universe. And then this grand thing happened, and everything started. Yeah, in
give
their mind,
break.
It was the center of the
okay.
universe.
Neither of us got much sleep last night.
You were up to like 2:30 in the morning.
Oh, yeah. I got a huge family. They were all in my basement last night.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the Copernican principle basically says that the idea that the Earth occupies no preferred place.
Right.
Okay, because Copernicus discovered that the Earth revolves around the sun and that it wasn't stationary and that we have a heliocentric solar system.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, you know, this view that we are the middle and everything else was around us was just – it was gone. What they believed for years. Now, it didn't really change things religiously as much as most people believe.
Right.
You know, the Earth being the center of the universe was kind of like a bad thing for them religiously.
Yeah, that was actually counter Christian.
Yeah.
At that point.
Right.
It still is. Would be.
Yeah. It was because that they believed that like the further you got away from Earth, the closer you got to God, and so you know the Earth being the very center was like actually kind of a earthy, fleshy, bad, evil thing. And so if you have ever people. Say this all the time, stuff like, oh, and they believed the Earth was the center of the universe because they were the center of the universe and God thought they were the center of the universe. Well, no, that's not true.
Right.
They just believed that they believed it scientifically, and so that's what they believed. It was a scientific belief until they had different evidence. And then we're going to get into what the church said a little bit later. But
people who think they know and people you think know tell you something.
Yeah, you usually bend to believe in it.
Yeah.
So anyway, the Copernicus changed the idea of the Earth, and the idea is that the Earth no longer occupies a preferred place in the universe. It's
right.
called the principle of mediocrity. We should not assume that we are in any way privileged, that we are just like every other planet in the universe. Carl Sagan, that great atheist astronomer, has said the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe is challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. And if you look at this photo that he was talking about, where I believe it was Voyager 2 turned around and took a picture of Earth. Mm-hmm. Voyager 2, the spacecraft, turned around and took a picture of Earth from far away. And it was this little tiny dot in this huge photograph. And there was a one beam of light coming from the sun just covering this little tiny dot.
Right.
It was amazing.
Well, and when you think about something like that, And you have no hope for any kind of spiritual future, it's scary.
Oh, yeah. I mean, heck, the Hubble telescope discovered that patches of the light that we assumed to be gas were actually galaxies, some even larger than the Milky Way. I mean, the universe is just teeming with planets and galaxies. The Milky Way, our galaxy, has more than 100 billion stars, a billion with a B.
Wow.
But there are many galaxies. Uh-huh. I mean, there's even billions of galaxies. It's amazing. Now, if you guys are old enough to remember when the astronauts first went to the moon, when delivering this picture of the Earthrise coming over the other side of the moon, on Christmas Eve 1968, actually, the Apollo astronauts read, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth," and it was followed by silence.
Right.
Like, wow. Epic. God made. But then in Pale Blue Dot, years later, Carl Sagan looked at the picture Voyager took of Earth and said, "In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from anywhere else to save us from ourselves."
How depressing.
What's the underlying assertion there? The underlying assertion is there's no God. Humans aren't that important. And people often usually exaggerate the church's persecution on others and point out that God doesn't really exist. Well, we're just one planet among billions of planets that could have life, so we're probably not really special.
Right.
And, you know, Bruce Jakowski, in his book Search for Life on Other Planets, he said, "Because of this tremendous change in worldview, Copernicus's views were not embraced by the church. The history of his persecution is well known." That's what this guy who wrote a book
really
said. But we've talked about this on the show before. He's just wrong.
Right. The church told him.
The church told.
Publish it.
Publish, Copernicus. We like what you said. The reality check is Archbishop Nicholas Schoenberg in 1536 wrote to Copernicus, and he says, "Hey, in this thing you wrote, you maintain that the earth moves and that the sun occupies the lowest and central place in the universe. Therefore, with utmost earnestness, I entreat you, most learned sir, unless I inconvenience you, to communicate this discovery of yours to the scholars at the earliest possible moment."
Right.
Like, the actual stance from the church to Copernicus was, "Publish that stuff."
Yeah.
He even dedicated his book to the Pope, okay? I mean,
right.
So I don't know how guys get away with writing these books saying that the church persecuted Copernicus. It's ridiculous. They helped him publish it.
You know, it's ignorance. And not ignorance from a stupid point of view, but ignorance from a not knowing and not really caring point of view.
Right. But the ultimate question is our planet special in any way, or are we just like many other planets in the universe?
I have a feeling you're about to talk about that.
I think I should. All right. I mean, that's what the book and the video Privileged Planet are really all about. I kind of got sidetracked here with this Copernicus thing. But, you know, really, we're going to talk about this because, you know, people will argue, hey, there's probably alien life and complex life all over because there's so many stars. And there's perhaps hundreds or thousands or hundreds of thousands of life forms throughout the universe. You've heard of SETI, right?
Yes. The search for extraterrestrial intelligence.
Very good. Seth Shostak, who's a senior astronomer there, said, "The bottom line, actually, when you ask, why do you think that they're out there, talking about aliens,
right,
is that the universe is extraordinarily rich, extraordinarily vast. So unless there's something very, very special, miraculous, if you will, extraordinarily unusual about Earth, then what happened here must have happened many times. So, the question is there life on Earth that is special in some way? Is the Earth equation big or little?" And we have to balance the equation because, look, there's two sides to every question.
Mm-hmm.
One side is, how many trials do you get? How many stars are there? How many planets are there in the universe? How many attempts at life do you get? But the other side is the factors. It takes a lot of factors to have a habitable planetary system.
Right. And we've talked about that before.
Yes.
As far as... I can't remember who it was that came up with
Dr. Hugh Ross.
Yeah,
we had him on the show.
Long list of things that that make life possible.
Oh, man. We're going to talk about the laws of physics and chemistry. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to see that the laws of physics and chemistry that apply on Earth apply the same everywhere. Okay, this isn't just a religious thing. This is NASA scientists. Everyone agrees with this. The laws of physics are unchanging throughout the entire universe. And we need to talk about some of these laws of physics and the things that allow for life on Earth.
All right. Before we jump into this, though, because I don't want to interrupt you once we get going, let's do a Bible contradiction.
Bible contradiction.
I like having control of the show sometimes.
You control freak.
The Bible contradiction today comes from the New Testament.
Okay.
And basically from two of the Gospels, Matthew 27 and then John 19. What was the color of the robe placed on Jesus during his trial?
Green.
Okay. No.
Oh.
That was neither of the choices. You fail. All right. Matthew 27:28 says, "They stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him." John 19:2 says, "The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe." So John says purple.
Purple.
While Matthew.
My good friend Matt.
Yeah, we're really close like that.
While
Matthew says it was scarlet. So was it purple or was it scarlet?
Oh, okay. Jeez.
This is a Bible contradiction.
Man, this was from the website infidels.org. Uh-huh. And yes. Don't go to the website. Unless you want to smash your head.
I can't help it.
Okay. First of all,
it's fun to laugh.
Let's just be honest. The Gospels were written by guys.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know the difference between purple and scarlet anyway.
That's true.
All right.
If you're a guy, you're not very color coordinated anyway.
We're lucky they didn't say red. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, that probably.
It was kind of dark reddish.
Yeah.
Darkish bluish reddish.
Okay. I get your point.
But really, the main point here is that. Okay. Norman Geisler's list of Bible contradiction resolutions.
Uh-huh.
Mistake number 16, confusing general statements with universal ones.
Right.
Okay, he says, critics often jump to the conclusion that unqualified statements admit of no exceptions. They seize upon verses that offer general truths and point to the, with glee to the obvious exceptions. You know, this is kind of the same thing, a little bit of the same thing, where, you know, they're making a general statement about the color. The point of the Bible here wasn't to give you an exact, you know, the exact Adobe value color number of the SAS.
What is the hex code for that number there?
I mean, they were just trying to give a general description, you know, and a general description is sufficient to say whether it was black or gray or whatever. I mean, purple or scarlet.
Right.
I mean, it's really pretty close. Especially, I looked at a color map, and you're a graphic designer, so you might even know some of this. You could have something that's purple, and you could have something that's scarlet, but if you have the same type of color light shining on it, they actually will look almost exactly the same. And so depending on your color light source, the shadows that were hitting things, I mean, it might have looked exactly the same.
That's true.
And they just use a different word to describe it. Another possibility is that this sash was made of two different materials, one scarlet and one purple. So, I mean,
that's true too.
You know, there's really, this isn't a contradiction. A contradiction is something that is, you know, fact A and fact B cannot be resolved.
And besides that, if you're going to come at us with a contradiction, come at us with a contradiction about something that...
Substance?
Yeah, that has substance that's going to actually make a difference in our salvation.
Yeah, and I think really, though, to give them some credit, if the Bible is just wrong about all kinds of facts, you know, then maybe they're saying, well, maybe it's wrong about the big facts, too.
Right.
So they're trying to discredit. But that is the answer for our Bible contradiction today. And we are going to have to take a radio break.
Because you talk too long.
Because I talked too long. But, okay, let me give you a couple little tiny facts here right before we go, okay?
Yeah.
The elements and factors necessary for life on Earth are necessary everywhere, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk about life on other planets.
Right.
But what is needed here is needed everywhere. So we're going to look at what is needed here and see if that applies to planets anywhere else.
Okay.
Now, the big question is it could there be? Would it be against Christianity if there was life elsewhere? And the answer is no. Life appears wherever God puts life.
Right.
That's plain and simple thing. We're going to be right back after the break on the Truth Revolution show talking about physics, planets, life, and whether or not we're special or just like every other planet in the universe.
Right on. Stick around.
Truth Revolution.
And welcome back, Truth Revolution. I'm Dave. With me is Jeff, as always.
And we're from Revolution Church.
We are. We forgot to mention that.
Yeah, come on out. 1111 West South Street is our address, mm-hmm. right across from Ace Hardware on South Street.
If it's still there.
I think it's probably there.
Okay, good.
Also, you can hit us up, truthrevolution.tv. Truthrevolution.tv is our website. You can find information about us or the church or mm-hmm. God or science there. We're going to have the links to the book and video, Privileged Planet, you know, sometime later this week, so if we get the regular show up. Anyway, we're talking about whether or not life is common in the universe and whether or not the Earth is special in any way. The idea put forth by Carl Sagan is that we're not privileged.
Right.
The planet is just a lonely speck,
yes.
Pretty much the same as every other planet in the universe.
We have one little speck in a huge universe.
Now, here's kind of a cool idea, okay? There is a small habitable zone for the Earth. Did you know that if the Earth was 5% closer to the sun, just 5%, we would have a runaway greenhouse effect, 900 degrees Fahrenheit here, if the Earth was 5% closer.
I don't like Kansas summers anyway, and if we were 5% closer...
You'd have a serious suntan.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm moving to...
You'd look good.
I'm moving to Alaska. I don't care. I like the white...
Okay, yeah, because it'll only be 800 degrees there. All right, if we were 20% further away from the sun... Mm-hmm. Carbon dioxide clouds would form, which would initiate a cycle of ice and cold that sterilized Mars.
See, and I don't like cold either.
You know? So we would be, 20% further away, we'd look like Mars.
Uh-huh.
5% closer, we'd have 900 degree Fahrenheit weather.
So what are you saying, Jeff?
I'm saying that our planet is in the exact right place for a planet to sustain life.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, we're in a very narrow band right around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
If just like any planet, if we were just a little bit closer, a little bit further away, we'd be dead. It wouldn't work. Life would not have happened here. Even if you're an evolutionist, you'd have to say life wouldn't have evolved here.
So you're saying that the track that we are on around the sun is called the habitable zone.
The habitable zone for Earth, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the presence of liquid water is a necessary condition for mm-hmm. life. But it's not a sufficient condition. What we mean by that is, and here's a quote from the video, the recipe for life is much more complex than just add water.
Oh, yeah.
You know, NASA, I love NASA. I follow them on Twitter. I love hearing their updates. And I mean, I love NASA. But sometimes they tick me off because they seem like, hey, man, every time we find a little bit of water on a planet, we're throwing
a
celebration
life.
Like, there's probably life.
Right.
Now, look, if you have a bucket and you put in water, it's not like, oh, there's probably going to be life now.
Have you looked at the pond water on this planet?
Okay,
it's teeming with life.
It's just not... many more factors involved than just add water.
Right.
But not every planet even has water.
Right.
Okay, so we already know we're in the right habitable zone. You have to have the right temperature. But some other factors necessary for life, it has to be a terrestrial planet. Okay? Has to allow for tectonic recycling. This is not recycling like, please remember to recycle your milk bottles. This is tectonic recycling. Plate tectonics, you ever heard of that phrase?
Yes.
All right. I've spoken with some older people who'd never heard of plate tectonics.
Really?
Apparently they didn't teach it in school a while ago.
Well, it's a fairly new concept.
It is fairly new.
I mean,
decade. You know, when you're talking about geological science.
Right.
It's fairly new.
In the history of the Earth, it's a fairly new concept.
Yeah. Well, plate tectonics makes possible the carbon cycle, which is essential mm-hmm. to our planet's living here.
Wow.
Habitability.
All right.
What happens is that heat from the Earth's interior makes its way to the surface, setting the mantle in motion. Right? This builds mountains. It releases carbon dioxide in the atmosphere through volcanoes. Energy from the sun evaporates water into mm-hmm. clouds, which rains.
Yeah, it's quite in the same way. Yeah, as our atmosphere works,
mm-hmm.
In that heat rises and cold air. You know,
right, and all this wouldn't even happen if we didn't have plate tectonics going on, okay? Plate tectonics also maintain dry land in the face of constant erosion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, erosion is going to wear down mountains and continents and start creating some kind of water world.
Right.
I mean, over millions of years, if plate tectonics wasn't happening, if tectonic recycling wasn't happening, our planet would be just a big water mm-hmm. world with a bunch of dirt floating around.
That was a good movie. I can't wait until that happens.
Yes, that was a wonderful movie. You have great taste in movies.
Thanks.
And
Me and Kevin Costner are like this.
I bet you listen to Justin Bieber, too.
No.
I'm just kidding. Actually, he's a pretty good musician. Yeah. But he can play piano and drums and guitar. Anyway, he's kind of like me.
If it hadn't been for the nice planet that we live on, he wouldn't
We'd have no Justin Bieber.
We would have no
Justin
Bieber.
No, there's not a Justin Bieber anywhere else in the universe. Jeez, this has totally gone the wrong direction.
Kill that bunny.
All right, so plate tectonics maintain dry land. Otherwise, we'd have a giant water world. George Brimhall has said this. The creation of ores, metals, and their placement close to the Earth's surface are the result of much more than simple geologic change. Only an exact series of physical and chemical events occurring in the right environment and sequence, followed by certain climatic conditions, can give rise to a high concentration of these compounds so crucial to the development and civilization and technology. Now, this is kind of one of the main points of Privileged Planet. Mm-hmm. Not only is our planet in the exact right place for life to occur, but it's also in the exact right place for technology to occur, for discovery to occur of the universe,
really? So
for learning.
So you're saying that I wouldn't call us a hugely technologically advanced, you know, race, as like maybe opposed to the Vulcans or whatever. But
they're not real.
No. But I mean, so you're saying that with the way the Earth is put, I mean, it advances our technology?
Absolutely. As Brimhall just said, if our Earth wasn't in the exact way it was now, without plate tectonics happening, without the exact elements happening, the exact right chemicals at the exact right time, and the exact right series of events, Earth would not have the type of metals it has up near the crust where they are easily available for us to get.
Okay, I see.
We simply wouldn't either have them or we wouldn't have access to them.
Gotcha.
All right. Now, so basically the same process that makes Earth habitable, especially plate tectonics, and the hydrological cycle are indispensable for concentrating mineral ores. So the basic fact that, hey, this planet makes us alive also makes it available for technology to exist.
That's very interesting.
Now let's talk about the atmosphere. The atmosphere of oxygen and nitrogen ensures a nice climate, temperate things. It gives us protection from radiation.
Yes, oxygen is nice.
Oxygen is nice. But, I mean, you think about it. Mercury has no atmosphere, okay?
Right.
800 degrees Fahrenheit. Venus has a carbon dioxide atmosphere, 870 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
Due to their thick atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Earth, we have a nitrogen-oxygen atmosphere. 57 degrees is the average temperature on Earth.
I love it.
I could do 57.
I could do it. Especially compared to 800.
Mars has a carbon dioxide atmosphere, negative 50 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mm-mm.
I mean, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune all have hydrogen and helium atmospheres, and you wouldn't even be able to survive inside those, regardless of the temperature. Our atmosphere is the only one that's survivable in our entire solar system, which, of course, we know that, which is why astronauts wear spacesuits.
Duh, Jeff.
But you consider this. Out of all of our planets, only one contains the right atmosphere. I mean, the odds of having the exact right chemicals meeting in the exact right way to provide the exact type of atmosphere you need for a climate that's nice, at the same time you have a planet that's in the habitable zone, at the same time you have a planet that has plate tectonics, and these are only three things. I mean, we have a list of over 200 things, Dave.
Right,
that are needed for life. Also, consider the atmosphere's transparency. This is a quote from the book, which is actually just part of the story. Our atmosphere participates in one of the most extraordinary coincidences known to space. An eerie harmony among the range of wavelengths of light emitted by the sun, transmitted by the Earth's atmosphere, converted by plants into chemical energy, and detected by human eye. I mean, this is amazing!
What did you just say?
What do you mean? Okay, look. The wavelengths emitted by the sun, transmitted to us by the atmosphere, okay, because the atmosphere doesn't block everything.
Okay, so the wavelengths of light emitted from the sun.
Yeah, okay. If it let in everything, we'd have radiation, we'd die.
Okay.
But it's just the perfect atmosphere so that it blocks out what it needs to block out, and it lets in what we need.
Nice.
So that we can see with our eyes, so that planets have the type of light they need to live. Like, it is exactly right for life and visibility.
Right.
That our atmosphere. I mean, it's not like, wow, we have the perfect atmosphere for life, but you can't see anything.
Okay.
It's not like, wow, we have the perfect atmosphere to see, but you will die.
Right.
I mean, you get both the nutrients from the sun and that will nourish the planets and plants and things like that, but also that we have visible eyes that can see what's going on down on Earth.
Excellent.
Now the question is, but couldn't we have evolved to utilize any type of light? And because this is a good question, Greenstein has said, one might think that a certain adaptation has been at work here. Remarkably enough, the answer is no. He's saying
really?
Only the type of light we have right now would work. For within broad limits, all molecules absorb light of similar colors. The absorption of light is accomplished by the excitation of electrons and molecules to higher energy states. And the general scale of energy required to do this is the same, listen, the same no matter what molecule you are discussing. Photons with too much energy would tear molecules apart, while those with too little energy could not trigger chemical reactions. Make it visible, that means.
Right.
So in other words, the same unlikely events that gave us a breathable atmosphere also gave us an atmosphere that protects us from lethal radiation and an atmosphere allowing in the narrow range of visible light for us to see with our eyes and make discoveries.
Right.
No other way would have happened that could have allowed for all three things.
So you're saying our atmosphere has several different purposes.
Amazing purposes. Mm-hmm. All right, a large moon. We have a huge moon, and it stabilizes our axis and our
beautiful.
Climate. Okay, we learned about this in junior high.
Right.
Moon stabilizes the Earth's axis at 23.5 degrees. And it varies from 21.1 to 24.5 degrees over several thousand years. But really, the moon stabilizes the Earth. For instance, moons Mars are a lot smaller. If our moon was similar, Earth's tilt would vary not by 3 degrees, but more than 30 degrees.
Wow.
When the North Pole was leaning sunward through the middle of the summer half the year, most of the northern hemisphere would experience months of perpetual scorching daylight, hot enough to make Death Valley in July feel like a shady spring picnic. That's
nice.
A quote from the book.
Uh-huh.
Any survivors would suffer viciously cold months and perpetual night on the other half of the year. So, I mean, the large moon just basically saves our life. We would not live without a moon.
That's awesome.
It's not just temperature, though. Without a moon, we wouldn't have wide distribution of rain, which makes life hospitable and able to happen. So, and by the way, the moon couldn't be any larger, and it would be comparatively huge. It's just the perfect distance, the perfect size, and darn, we're almost done.
I know.
All right, so...
Well, we're not almost done. The show's almost over. We're not even close to being done.
We're going to do this again next week and really get into some more science. But they're talking about the Drake equation, the odds that life would occur anywhere compared to the factors, okay? The problem is, for intelligent to life to appear, there's a lot more than just like seven factors that they often use in what's called the Drake equation. The odds that life would occur with 20 factors, which they don't take into account with a lot of science, but 20 factors is one out of a million, billion, trillion, one out of a trillion. Okay. Number of stars in our galaxy, 100 million. No, I'm sorry, billion. 100 billion.
So,
100 billion stars.
But the chances...
are less than that.
Yeah, are less than that. Wow.
You know what that means? It means we're rare in the galaxy. The odds are that there may be one planet in our galaxy with life.
Ours.